Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is the Toffee Web Podcast.
When will this misery end, eh, Blues? As if all the frustration of points deductions and this never-ending takeover saga weren't enough, things continue to deteriorate at Everton, culminating in what we can only hope will be the nadir on Monday night. On this episode of the Toffee Web Podcast, Paul, Adam, Andy and myself will discuss that harrowing 6-0 defeat at Chelsea, which erased our goal difference advantage over Nottingham Forest. We'll look ahead to what is now an absolutely massive game against the Trees on Sunday. How will Sean Dyche go about rebuilding what brittle morale remained around the team's prospects over the run-in after what happened at Stamford Bridge? And can the players respond to what will no doubt be another powerful atmosphere at Goodison Park? And of course, we'll touch on the continuing impasse off the pitch as 777 partners are granted an extension to the deadline by which they need to repay MSP Sports Capital, essentially kicking that can down on an already long road to the end of the season. But first, that massacre at Stamford Bridge. Paul, draw the short straw, gets to talk about it first. You've had a few days to come to terms with it, Paul. What's your take on how it all went so badly wrong?
It was awful, wasn't it? I don't know. I was having out for a jog this morning, and I was just trying to think about what we'd say, and you know what sort of spin you can put on it to make it. I don't know. And it's so hard to put any positive on that game, isn't it? It was so bad. It felt a bit like to me, like the end of the Martinez reign. You know, when like because there's been plenty of games and we just got hammered because the other team's been too good and we haven't been at it and just been absolutely punished. And you could say that was a little bit the way for this one, but the players didn't look bothered, did they? And that's the real concern, isn't it? That the players didn't look into. And when players have down tools, when they don't want to play for the manager anymore or whatever. I mean, under Martinez, it was towards the end of the season when, yeah, we weren't going to get relegated. We weren't in any relegation threat. You know, they all probably knew he was leaving. They all, because there was a lot of money coming in with Mashiri. It was kind of, everyone knew Roberto Martinez. You know, and it's not right, but it feels like it almost becomes a natural thing for players to sort of stop playing. And that's, we've seen it for years for different clubs all over. Now, when we're in this sort of position, blimey, if we're going to down tools now and, I'm keeping an open mind because while performance haven't been great, I think that's the only game really when the players have looked really that disinterested and that unbothered. So I'm hopeful that with the game coming around quite quickly against Forest, it's a real opportunity for the players and the manager to really show that isn't them and that they are better than that. And we'll come to that a little bit later on. But in terms of the game, it was awful. What annoyed me, and I'm trying not to swear, frustrated me,
go
irritated
ahead.
Me.
Go ahead.
You can look at the... peeved me off the most. I think every goal was preventable. I think, yeah. Well, maybe there was the fourth one was pretty well taken, but I think, like, you know, all the goals, if you look at them all, the first one, a tackle should have come in easily. Pickford's not in the middle of his goal. The second one, bit unlucky where the ball bounces, but no one's attacking that sort of second, you know, that loose ball. No one's there. The third one, obviously Pickford, awful mistake. I'd have a little bit of a dig at another try. Yeah, you can't really defend Pickford that instance. And Arnold's like, yeah, how many times do you see Arnold with his hands out go, oh, well, what am I supposed to do here? No one's moving for me. Why not move aside a little bit and make it, come on, give me the ball. You know what I mean? There was none of that. He didn't want the ball. You know what I mean? Yeah, so, yeah. The fifth one, stupid challenge by the Corday. Yeah, there's no... Yeah, the sixth one, yeah, last minute in the game, it's how much space in midfield. I mean, it's so, you know... Gomez had only been on the pitch for half that match. You know, there's so much bit, and you haven't watched them all back. Why would I? But I'm just so disappointed in the manner we conceded the goals. And yeah, I just hope it's on Sunday. You know, when we come out for the game after the match on Sunday, we've seen a good performance and full of zip, and they really realise how much that needs an improvement, and we'll soon see. How much they're playing for Dyche or not, won't we? I guess in the next week because there's three big games. But awful, and I just really hope we can draw a line under it very quickly.
Well, I'm not volunteering to go next, Adam.
No, please, please.
Go on. I'll
go on. All right, okay. I mean, you've summed it up in a nutshell, Paul. It's interesting that you were thinking about the game whilst on a run today, because you could probably give some tips to some of our lot. There was so much space in that first half. There was so little pace. Was that partly because of how we were set up? Yes. And I'm sure we'll get into Deitch's tactics. But in terms of the players on the pitch, as you say, looking willing to fight for the manager, for the team, but themselves, really. You mentioned Onana there, and we could single out pretty much any of the players who performed, if you call it that, on Monday. But Onana is a player who, at times, we've hyped up, and other teams hype him up, clearly. He has a lot of self-belief. He plays international football for Belgium. And in terms of his own value, his own brand, a performance like that does absolutely nothing for it against a side like Chelsea. He was awful. And to see players of his ability... How many times were players nutmegged in the first sort of 15 minutes? It's just, bizarre. I mean, I watched that sober with a can of San Pellegrino, and it was like having root canal surgery without an anaesthetic. It was dreadful. It was and it's worth mentioning as well. If you had to finish work early or trudge down there by train, automobile, however you got there, and sit through that, and obviously a lot of people quite rightly, certainly by half time, had made the decision to call it a day, but surely there should be some sort of whip round from the club. To recompensate those people. But as you mentioned in the intro, Lyndon, our money worries probably don't account for that. It was so bad on so many levels. As you said, Paul, I think there isn't a positive to take from it. The only one I'd maybe kind of lean towards is that we were so bad when we beat Burnley. And I was kind of annoyed coming out of that, annoyed with 3 points. So... To maybe see some kind of reaction from this, to remove any of the kind of complacency that, yes, everything's going to be absolutely fine. Because if we do sleepwalk through the end of the season, if we do assume that that's, you know, all is said and done and probably things are going to change in the summer, so we don't really need to impress ourselves upon games, then that will happen again. And yeah, we might not have performed that badly maybe since the Villa game, where we really kind of felt like we downed tools. But if we show anywhere near that level of performance against Nottingham Forest, I'd fancy them to score a hatful as well. We were that poor, and boy, do we need a reaction on Sunday. We need to give those fans something, because, as I say, the ones who went down there had not even scraps to feed off. So the players need to give them something back on Sunday. I'm glad I'm not going. I was supposed to be going, and it's my niece's christening, so I found a way out. So yeah, so Godspeed to anyone who does go. And yeah, this time it'll not be Pellegrino for me. What did you think, Andy?
What flavour San Pellegrino did you go for?
It was like a blood orange one. I thought if we're watching Chelsea on a Monday night, I might as well have the most middle class thing possible. So
yeah, yeah. It doesn't help at all. But I just wondered.
Yeah, flat.
It's funny, isn't it, how you react to certain things. As we've discussed on several pods, you know, we've been individually really down at certain parts of this season. And at certain parts of this season, I think it has broken us in our own little ways, probably at different points. I can honestly say I have not thought about that game since. I have somehow not erased it, because it definitely happened, but I have just dismissed it as something that I don't want to think about, but it didn't leave me with that kind of harrowing feeling that other results this season have, and other moments in the last 2 or 3 years have, when you feel it in the pit of your stomach. Oh my God. It just didn't do that. I was kind of numb to it after two. I kind of built it up as well, because I went to stay with my mate, and my mate isn't an Everton fan, but he's a football fan. And he was like, oh, big game tonight, looking forward to watching it with you and all this kind of stuff. I was like, yeah, you know, we might get something there, might be all right. And when it went to two, he was feeling bad for me. And I was like, well, I think we can write this one off. And I honestly have managed to put it to the back of my mind. And to me, it's a little bit like training a dog. That you ignore bad behaviour and you try to praise good behaviour. Now, I'm going to ignore this, and I've got loads of treats in my pocket for the weekend. And I've just looked at it like that, in that it was so bizarrely bad that I have managed to dismiss it. I don't think it was a 6-0 game. Whether that's me just trying to look back on it and looking for positives. If you told me before the match Everton are going to lose 6-0 tonight, I might have chuckled it out of nervousness. But you kind of imagine how a game would look, or I do. I imagine how a game would look if you say this is going to end 6-0. And I might have gone, crikey, did we have two sent off or something? Or did Pickford go after 5 minutes or something along those lines? None of that happened. But it didn't strike me as necessarily a 6-0 game. I think there was one outstanding footballer on the pitch who is in the form of his life. Who
Beto.
But no, Cole Palmer is just a cut above, and everything he touches turns to gold, is the old saying. And it's right, you know, he can do no wrong at the moment. He's in that mode. And I felt like he scored as many as he wanted to score on the night. He was that much better than everybody else on the pitch. And yes, we were bad. Of course we were bad. We lost 6-0 in the Premier League. That shouldn't ever happen. But I didn't think it was quite as bad as the scoreline suggested. But I've kind of managed to write it off. And it emphasises now what a huge week it is. If we're going to allow them to put that behind them. I mean, it looked like Deitch rolled the dice a bit tactically. He mentioned in his post-match that we were trying to get at them quickly. We were going to be, you know, pressing them high. We were going to try and attack. It went wrong, and it went wrong quite quickly without us scoring a goal. And I think then they didn't really know what to do next. Do you kind of stick or twist at that point? And we kind of just kept going to try to do the same thing, and it just didn't work. I think it's the first time that we've really, really properly set up to almost a bit gung-ho away from home. And it didn't work. And it looked for the first time that there were players out there that just simply did either not understand or not agree with what he said. And that's a little bit scary, but they'll be held to account on Sunday. They'll be held to account as a team, and I don't think they'll get away with that again.
At Goodison, you can't get away with it at Goodison, can you? I mean, the crowd will let you know. I just hope it doesn't come to that. I mean, it was depressing. A bit like you, Andy, I have kind of not dwelt on it too much, just because, you know, it was such a bad result that it's probably not good for the mental health to dwell on it too long. But I mean, it was depressing as much for its familiarity as anything. I mean, we haven't been beaten that heavily since being smashed 7 by Arsenal, which was, what, 19 years ago. We've had some utterly horrible results and performances during the Mashiri years. You know, you can get 5-2 at home to Arsenal, 5-2 away at Liverpool, 4-0 away at Spurs, 5-0 away at Spurs. Each one a horror show that more or less just underlined the degree to which the manager in the dugout at the time was failing. And unfortunately, I mean, Dyche is demonstrably failing at everything he's renowned for at the moment. Defensively, we've become a mess. The low block, I mean, at Burnley, his middle name could have been low block, and it's nowhere to be seen at times, particularly when we needed it. I think that was the game that we needed it. If initially your initial tactic of going a bit gung-ho and trying to catch, you know, a Chelsea team that I think we all decided was there to be got at if we could, you know, as they showed with their argument over the penalty, they're a bit dysfunctional. They're a young team. Pochettino hasn't quite got them playing the way he wants to. They've struggled against Burnley with 10 men. They struggled at Sheffield United. And I think, you know, Dyche has been trying to recreate Brighton, and clearly it's not happened. So once you go 1-0, 2-0 down, and your midfield has caved the way that it has, I think then you just need to completely reassess and say, okay, now it's time to sit in and make this difficult now, because to lose 6-0 in a game is unforgivable. There are ways you can adjust and approach the rest of that game to ensure that you don't have the goal difference advantage that you have over your rivals get completely wiped out in one game. I mean, that was unforgivable. We can't seem to score from set pieces anymore, despite being the biggest side in the league, because it's all become just so predictable. Corners either fail to beat the first man or are sent to the back post, where opposition defences, you know, just pack it with players. I think we had 8 corners at Chelsea, which away from home at a team like Chelsea is not a bad, you know, not a bad tally of corners. I don't think we really bothered them with any of them. A couple of them, I mean, I think Onana and Branthwaite put a couple of headers wide, which they probably should have done better with. But, I mean, that first half at Chelsea made a mockery of Dyche's, you know, minimum requirement is maximum effort mantra. And whatever change in the mentality and changing the story that he crowed about earlier in the season, it's nowhere to be seen now. He's unquestionably faced challenges, particularly that was obviously the points deductions, and he'll point to the fact that we would be practically safe without those points deductions. But the reality is we've had 8 points taken away. And it's his job to manage that and to throw his own words back at him, shut out the noise, control the controllables, but he's completely lost the ability to do that. You know, instead we've won one game in 15, and we were so utterly abject in the one that we did win that we scarcely deserved it. And under different circumstances, i.e. were it earlier in the season, and there was anyone with the will to do it, he'd have been sacked, and deservedly so in my opinion. But, you know, he's still there now. It's up to him to cajole something out of this team. The fans will give it their all, I'm sure, on Sunday, but the players need to be 100% up for it and make amends, as you said, Adam, because they can't ask for any more backing from the stands than they've been given. And honestly, the club's very existence may depend on it. My concern coming out of the Chelsea game is how do the players who are in charge of rousing them the Colemans and the Tarkovskys, how do you get them up for it? You know, because there's going to come a time where the motivational stuff just doesn't work anymore. They've each individual player has got to try and find it from within themselves, I think, and that's the worry.
But they have had to go to that well a lot. Is it, I mean, from a human point of view, is this not understandable that you get nights where it all falls apart? Because the mental strain of this season, I know all the rest comes with it. We talk about mental strain on footballers, but it's been a lot. They are safe, technically, but they're not because of the points.
Right. But I mean, but at the end of the day, the technically part doesn't matter because the reality is the reality. And it's not just any old situation where, you know, you're going to miss out on, I don't know, say European qualification or a top 10 finish. I mean, this is relegation we're talking about. It's got to be all hands to the pump. And, you know, you can't have performances like Onana turned in. And when you do, you can't be walking off the pitch having a joke with the opposition player. Yeah, you've got to, you know, I was not surprised at all that he got hooked. I felt bad for the defenders, honestly, because they had nothing in front of them. You know, Brantford obviously had a bad game and he was made to look a bit of a chump by Palmer, who was, as you said, Andy, just a cut above, just a level above. But yeah, it's inexcusable, even given all the strain that, as you say, Andy, they've been under. Because, as I said before, you've got to come. There's got to be a point where you just circle the wagons and say, okay, no more. You know, it's 3-0. Pickford's just had an almighty clanger, but we've got to make sure it doesn't get any worse. And unfortunately, they allowed it to get twice as worse.
After the game, Sean Dyche referenced like it was a bit of a perfect storm. Everything that could have gone wrong did go wrong. We got injuries, etc., etc. But I think Everton's just a big perfect storm at the moment, really, isn't it? You know, and it's not just one game. It's the whole thing of Everton and points deductions, ownership, everything. And while for some people it might feel like a little bit of an easy like get out for the players to be able to sort of say like, oh God, they've got a lot to deal with here. I think the biggest factor of all that for me is because at the end of the day, they're players and they're players and they're getting paid, and no matter like all the sort of noise that's going on in the background, the bottom line is they're getting paid and they're playing. But I think the bigger picture for nearly all of them is they don't know where their future lies. They've got, you know, and that's the big problem. A lot of them, some of them, I hope a lot of them, want to be at the club but don't know if they're, you know, the finances are such that they could be shipped out. All the noise about Dyche, a lot of pressure on him from supporters and media and whatever else, rightly or wrongly. You know, they might think, oh, but if you know, they think your Tarkovskys, your McNeils, they might be, well, if Dyche gets moved on, I might not be wanted by the next guy. And Onana, probably desperate to leave. He doesn't know what's around the corner for him. There's so much uncertainty tied in with that, and that's the big problem, and that's got to play in your mind. I bet you've all had jobs. No, I have. I bet you've all had jobs and you thought, like, I'm not sure of my future. And it's hard to put in everything that you can. You know what I mean? Like, and being a footballer is very different to anything that we've done, I know. But it's got to be difficult for them. And this isn't something which is just like, oh, this season's a bit mad. This is built up for years now for a lot of these players been here a long time. So I can, well, I mean, and whether that culminates in one, I swear now, shit show of a performance the other night, then it's, you know... Hopefully that's all it is, you know, in terms of hopefully that's the worst it can get. You know, hopefully that's the point where, if nothing else, they can sort of, you know, put that line in the sand and be like, look, okay, look, we don't want relegation on our CV as well. Let's just bloody get this job done. And then whatever happens from there, you know, I mean, it's done. It's got to benefit them anyway, whatever their futures lie, if they can put on some good performances between now and then. It doesn't have to all be lost for Dyche. I feel sorry for him because, you know, again, he's a human being at the end of the day. He seems a good guy to me, Sean Dyche. And, you know, I don't like talking about people like, oh, we should be sacked and all that and all this. But all the noise, to me, it kind of feels inevitable that this season will end. Hopefully the takeover gets sorted, whether that's 777 in charge or whatnot. And we've seen the inevitability that follows fan pressure. It normally means, okay, well, we'll listen to the fans and we'll sack the manager. And, you know, that might or might need to be, like, might or might not be the right thing to do. But I feel for him with that, because he's worked in very, very, very testing circumstances. And, he'll be thinking, well, it's tough for him to do his job with all that noise too. You know what I mean? So all this thing that around it, it's the uncertainty of the future, which is the most difficult thing. So I feel sorry for him. I feel a bit, not as sorry for the players, but I certainly see why it's impactful for them. And we got so little, we got such a poor squad. I mean, that's what we've been left with in comparison to the richest Chelsea had the other day. And that's with, like, God knows how many injuries they've got. You know what I mean? And every team we come up, even when we come up against Bournemouth, you look at their bench, you're thinking, flipping heck. I mean, look what they can bring. I mean, it's not an easy fix at all. So I just hope that they can, you know, in the it might not be straight away, but in the games coming up, there's a 6 games now that I'm confident they'll get enough done. It won't be pretty, but I'm confident they'll get enough done. Where that leaves us after that, where that leaves Dyche after that, I don't know. But I just want this misery to end somewhere at some point. And whether that's with a new manager or I don't know, but you don't know when it's going to end really. But I just feel for them. I feel for Dyche particularly, because it's tough, the pressure he's under at the moment.
Yeah, there's no doubt in he's under a lot of pressure, but I think at any other juncture in the Majeure era, but one thing, and that was the other bizarre thing about Monday. He was there. It was like a sort of pantomime villain kind of coming back from behind the curtain. You're like, oh God, it's you. And then also the 777 guy, who's not the 777 guy, just the other guy. It was like something out of a strange bad theatre production with Kevin Thelwell in the middle trying to sort of hold it together and make another 120 point plan with no point to it. But that was a bonkers thing, because you were looking at a side like Chelsea, who, yeah, have also gone on a weird kind of spending spree. But you see a player like Cole Palmer, a young, very promising player, but who couldn't get into that City side. And you think that there's another version of the Everton story where that's the kind of player we maybe would have picked up. And instead, we recruited the cast-offs from both sides who they really didn't want. They were coming towards the end of their career. Your Schneiderlins, your Theo Walcotts on big money, and then other players on big money. And to your point about mentality, a lot of those players, they've either come in during this strange time and they're still kind of like, do I really belong here? Am I wanted here? There's players like Decore who haven't been around Everton for that long, but they feel like they've been there forever because they'll have played for 7 managers in a very short space of time. I mean, Mikalenko is still a relatively new player. He's one of the few sort of younger players we've got. And you think he was signed in the dregs of the Benitez era, played under Lampard, thrown into relegation battle after relegation battle, and now he's in another one without in any way touching what's happened to him off the pitch as well. That's a huge amount of strain, and that's just one player we're talking about. And then you've got others who are either older and who are probably just at this point thinking, oh my God, I probably do need to retire at this point. Maybe Ashley Young will consider that. Now I've said it out loud and manifested it. And then you've got others who maybe are a bit too naive, and someone like Onana is a different kind of personality probably to Richarlison, who at that time was a talismanic figure and who kind of carried us through. And there's a lot less of that around. There was a lot less sort of dogs of war about the defending on Monday. Something you said, Andy, really resonated, actually. I have kind of forgotten the game. I just remember it being really, really, really horrible. But then I do think about some of those goals and just the lack of fight and the lack of throwing bodies in the way. Even when we've been crap over the last few years, someone like a Connor Cody in the running will just sort of throw their chest in the way of something and we'll all think it's great. There wasn't even any of that. There wasn't any sense of desperation. And that's the worrying thing. And that's where I do start to point the finger back towards the manager, even though quite rightly we should flag up the players as well. And as I say, some of these players have done this time and time again. They should know by now. But when you see them not really wanting to go that extra mile, when even a more, shall we say, limited, less experienced manager like Frank Lampard can somehow kind of galvanise a bit of a unit in that running. We're not really seeing that from Deitch. Well, we're not at all. And we haven't done now since, well, when was the last good run of games? It was before Christmas. We're talking about months and months of disappointment. And I'm sure that affects a player's confidence. And yeah, we started the game well, but we what does that mean? In 5 minutes, Beto thighed one over the bar. That's not enough, is it? So it does really, really worry me that we've got huge pressure cooker games. And yeah, we've said a lot about mentality there, and you've got to be made of really strong stuff. We've also come out of that game with injuries to key players as well. That's testing. It's worried me that I'm not seeing too much worry from the players, not in a good way, not in a confident way, not in an assured way, but in a way that suggests to me, have they got the stomach for it? I don't know. And Deitch is a big part of that. Deitch has now got to show what he maybe has done at other times in his career at Burnley. And he's maybe at some times teetered on the brink of doing here at Everton, which is work with that small group and get the absolute most out of them, because we're gonna need it. We might be starting Sunday in a must-win game with a striker who can't score, with no supply line, and a defence that loves to concede goals at the moment. I'm not helping, am I? Sorry.
I agree with Paul in that I kind of feel sorry for Deitch. He was brought in to keep us up last season at all costs. He did it. Yes, it was close, but he did it. Then he was tasked with the unenviable job of trying to improve this lot with no money, pretty much no money, one or two extra players at no cost. And we all said, we've all been here and we've said it at the beginning of the season in the summer, whenever we did our podcasts, and we've said, God, if we could just have a season where there's not much drama in terms of we're somewhere in the middle, you know, you're more or less safe with this amount of games to go. Well, he's done it. He has achieved that. We are sitting on 35 points, 10 points above the relegation zone, with a game in hand and a better goal difference than the team third bottom. He's done it. The players may feel as if they've done it, because all the messaging, all the chat pre-season, and I spent into the season, would have been, come on guys, we just need to do X, Y, and Z. We need to do X, Y, and Z. Let's tick this off. A bit like I've been doing on my dear old chart. You tick off the results, you tick off the points. That's three more. Okay, we're late. They're obviously aiming for whatever they're aiming for. They've done it. But outside influence this season means that here we are, 2 points above the relegation zone, with the team third bottom still to play, the team fourth bottom still to play, the team just above us still to play. And all of a sudden, and the team that's actually bottom still to play. And all of a sudden you think this is a really, really scary thing all of a sudden. And I don't know. It's not really a reflection on Deitch and the players as to where we are in the league. I mean, it is, in effect, that if you look at one and winning 15, okay, yeah, if we won three of them, we probably would have been all right. But it's not a true reflection. I think that is now, once and for all, we wondered if it might play a part. It certainly didn't to begin with the 10 points, and when we went on that run, it didn't seem to, just after that, where we were still playing quite well but not really getting much. It seems now as if that is really playing its part. And I can understand it. And maybe that's why I'm finding this slightly easier than I would be if we were actually sitting here on 27 points
well, we are actually sitting here on 27 points, but if the team had managed to get 27 points this season, maybe that's why it's slightly easier in my head to deal with.
I come at it from the perspective that I predicted I think we'd finish around 12th, and that was based on the fact that I thought Deitch would be better in terms of managing the team, and I believe that our team and the players in it are actually a lot better than they've played since mid-December. I think one win in 15, there's no getting around. There's no getting, regardless of off-the-field strains and stresses, there's no excuse for that kind of run. And there's been individual games where we've kind of looked at the management of the game, Brighton away being one. There's been performances that really should have been better. Palace at home, you know, is one. Bournemouth away. I mean, there's been plenty of examples. West Ham at home. There's been plenty of examples where the management of the team has been shown up to be inadequate, in my opinion. And that's where, you know, that's where I struggle to have too much sympathy with Deitch. But I was going to ask, where, for each of you, where does that defeat on Monday rank for you in the rogues gallery of horrible Everton losses?
Well, I mean, in terms of downing of the tools, it felt a bit like that to me. But I think, again, like I say, some of them late March, and there's one stick in my mind of just being absolutely awful. Like, it was just like, even though none of them were 6-0, but, you know, there was just some really awful games at that point. One thing that was like, was when we go to, when Sam Allardyce was in charge, though, and we'd, you know, he wasn't slow in telling us very smugly how well he'd done the job and got in the safe so quickly and that, but just the ridiculousness of, like, we'd have, like, Arsenal away, or did we lose 5-1 away at Arsenal or something like that? We lost 5-0, I think, away at Spurs. And he'd just leave the best players, or not take them, or leave them on the bench. I just couldn't understand. It was just like, oh, well, you know, there's no point in even trying to get anything from this game. You know, we'll rest them, and, you know, then we got, Brighton at home coming up, and, you know, which pragmatically might have seemed fine, but for, like, it's just really cheating fans going down there. If you're just going to go and, like, you're going to leave, it was like Sigurdsson and Rooney, then players leave them on the bench for the whole game because, oh, we're already 3 down at all time. No point sticking them on now. Just criminal. You know, that for me, that was about as bad as it got. Just for, like, real disdain from the management. There's a lot of things went wrong on Monday, but it wasn't a case of the manager just going, oh, well, I'm going to bite this game off. And that was a lot worse for me than Big Sam ones.
I mean, we spoke about the fact that it was pretty similar to that. You mentioned in the intro as well, and in the away game at Spurs where we lost 5-0. And I had a little look at the match report on the BBC from way back when, and it could be today. What will concern Lampard most, and it should be remembered, he inherited this mess rather than created it, was the heartless fashion in which Everton appeared to throw him a towel once Spurs hit them with two quick goals. It was an abysmal performance, with Everton's midfield non-existent and the defence horribly vulnerable. I mean, that was Monday. It was down tools very quickly, because the players out there must have known within 20 minutes or so, this plan that we've put into place, it's gone horribly, horribly awry, and we're not going to claw anything back because we don't score enough goals. And it felt very similar to that. It was a capitulation. And yeah, as we say, but there've been others, and they usually do herald a change that's about to come. But as I mentioned earlier, I mean, we've got a sort of de facto owner who, I mean, he's probably not even got the credit on his phone to call up Jim White, has he? He's got no money. So he's certainly not going to make any kind of decision. And then our other prospective owners are scrabbling around for pocket money. It's embarrassing, really. I don't like to see managers go, and pretty much every manager, Everton manager of the Mejiri era, bar the obvious Rafa Benitez, most of the time I've thought, oh, that's a shame, but this is probably the right move. And maybe sometimes that's come a little sooner than others. But with Dyche, my only reason for wanting to keep Dyche in place is because, A, I know there's no point wishing for something that's impossible. B, there's no real options out there. Although, at this point in time, would someone else get a tune out of these players? Would a Leighton Baines come in and do something? Maybe. And also, it's so late in the day. It's too late. We kind of have to go with what we've got and hope that there's enough to get over the line, because my glass half full that I've come to at the end of this thought is that Lampard game did feel like, oh God, here we go, strap in, this might be the year. And we did turn a bit of a corner. We did have a bit of a reaction after that game. So maybe, just maybe, something will happen after this, because, yeah, it needs to.
Yeah, in my head, this isn't in the kind of pantheon of awful, awful, awful defeats we've suffered in the last, decade. I don't know, maybe probably even further back. Only because there wasn't really any hope. A lot of the times that we've lost badly, it's because it felt like there was hope for a bit, or it felt like I don't know, maybe we weren't quite so bad either side of it, or something. But this just seemed to be a very early on write-off. I mean, you know, I remember those games you're talking about. I remember some of the drubbings we've had at Anfield, where you just, with every goal, you just sink deeper and deeper and deeper. And it just didn't feel like that Monday. It felt like, I don't know, it felt like otherworldly, really. It felt like a different mood somehow, a different form of disappointment. But yeah, I wouldn't put it up there necessarily in, I mean, statistically, it is well in there. It's probably one of the worst in the Premier League era for statistically, but it just didn't feel like, I don't know, maybe it's just me, it just didn't feel quite as bad. And on the sacking thing, or on the changing the manager thing, I mean, I think you're right, Adam. I just think it's too, well, there's no one there to do it, but let's just say there was someone there to sack him. It's all too late for that. For me anyway, you'd just be scrapping around for, what do we want? Who would we want to do it for? Six games? Mm-hmm. I mean, who is going to do it? Who would we want to do it? Who's in a better position to do it than Sean Dyche, really, having been there for that time? I don't know. It doesn't feel like that's worth entertaining at the moment. I don't know. I don't know what else I can put on that, really. It's not the time to change the manager. I'm sure of that.
Well, no, I mean, six games to go with, yeah, as it was before Monday, three in a space of a week, within a derby and big games against Forest and Brentford. Now, I mean, I think I entertained it. I raised it as an option two games ago after Bournemouth, when they had a little bit more time. But it was always going to be hypothetical, because no one's going to make the decision, and there really aren't that many options. I mean, someone threw out the name Lee Carsley. It would probably not be a bad option. But I think the only benefit you get out of it is just to have some different ideas. Because my problem, going back to what I said before about Dyche, is this team has no ideas, and this team has no discernible pattern of play. Even with the benefit of a 3-week break and a week's trip to Portugal, other than to just lump it forward, which is what they did against Burnley, and however many games before that. In terms of Monday, I think it's absolutely is up there with some of the worst performances I've ever seen, and certainly of the Premier League era. But we've also played worse. I think it was as bad a first half as I've ever witnessed. But at least we had a bit of a go, attacking-wise. I mean, granted, Chelsea didn't exactly need to exert themselves at 4-0 and 5-0 up. But, I mean, we had 10 shots and at least put two on target. We've had some absolute mullerings where we've barely managed to get a shot in 90 minutes. I mean, that one, the Allardyce one at Spurs when we lost 4-0, I don't think we had a shot on target There was one game where we didn't even really have a shot. I can't remember which one it was. It might have been under Lampard, actually, but whichever. But, I mean, in the context of where we are, you know, the really quite frightening position we're in, and the fact that I was actually quite optimistic going into Monday that we'd be able to get something out of the game, which I feel quite naive about in retrospect. I mean, that's as bad as a defeat as I've seen. Up there, maybe with the 4-0 defeat at Highbury in 98, which obviously left survival in out of our hands going into the final day. So just in terms of context, it was that bad a defeat. But the more that I think about it, the more I feel that it's, I think it was that you, Andy, who said earlier on that, you know, if we'd kind of lost 1-0, you know, creditable 1-0, it probably would have been worse, because this does give something to react against. It's you know, you've got to sort of hit bottom before you bounce back up. That's where my optimism, whatever optimism I can muster up now, comes from. That and the fact that we do have three very important home games to come, and they are at home. And yes, we've been bad at home, but at least we have the crowd. At least we have home field advantage for those games, and you would prefer that, because the argument that we've been having quite often, I mean, I've said it quite often on the podcast the last few weeks, is we're set up to play better away from home. I've kind of, you know, abandoned that now. I think we need home field advantage. We need Goodison, and hope that it works three more times, get us over the line.
I think that's a better way of summing it up. It was as bad a result, but in terms of how the game panned out, at least we had a go, at least we had shots, blah, blah, blah. I think that's a better way of summing it up than I did.
Just thinking as well, I think the Martinez one when we lost 4-0 at Anfield, and then Funes Mori got sent off, yeah. That was definitely the worst, actually, thinking about it. That was so bad. That was appalling. That might have been the game without a shot. I don't know. That was abysmal. That was an abomination, that game. But I'm thinking about managers as well, in terms of, like, when teams have done this at this, like, really hit the panic button at this stage of just, like, you know, six games to go or less. It's never really worked. And I bet somebody will come up with, I seem to remember Mark Hughes taking on Southampton quite late in the day and steering them over the line. I don't know if it was just a six games to go or longer, but I mean, you think like Leeds United last season and Garcia, and then he even replaced Garcia with Allardyce. You know what I mean? That was on. Remember Alan Shearer had Newcastle United with like similar amount of games to go, and it just went worse and worse. And I somehow remembered I think it was Crystal Palace going with Thomas Brolin and Lombarda, like years ago, and some crazy sort of like, that's you know, I mean, yeah, what would be all equivalents? Beto and Gomez, I don't know, but like, you know, it just doesn't, I don't think at this stage it really worked. I mean, it really works getting Baines in now. I mean, blimey, that would be an unfair on Baines. Like, imagine Baines took us down, that'd be an unfair legacy, Leighton, but you know what I mean? And some of the, I think it's far too knee-jerk. And you might scoff, people might scoff, say, well, it's not knee-jerk when you've only won 1-15. I get it, but at this point of the season, I think it would be crackers to be second. I think if you look at the bigger picture, Andy painted it quite well about like sort of like how, you know, the players, the manager might feel, the job that they've done. Really, and if you look at the course of the season, isn't really a bad one. Dyche has been here before many times with Leeds. It's been to meet him work. He said at Burnley, it felt like he was always like the master of like teetering on the edge of relegation, but not quite getting relegated. And, you know, if he can teeter one more time and get it done, I'm not so sure the next three games will actually do it. I mean, looking ahead to the Forest game, it feels to me like it's more of a must not lose than a must win to me, probably for both teams. I wouldn't be shocked if it's a draw, but both teams might just be a little bit too scared to lose come that one and take a point each. Liverpool, well, let's write that off because we never do well. Brentford, you never know with them. But I think then the two after that, I'm you know, the Sheffield United, the Luton. I think when it comes to the crunch, we'd get over the line in them two games. So I'm confident enough at the games we've got left. Maybe not say the next two, but the following three before Arsenal. I'm confident enough that we'll get enough done. It won't stop the it won't stop the pressure. It won't stop people asking for the sacking of Dyche Simonis when that happens. I believe that'll probably happen this summer when 7-7-7 come in because of fan pressure more than anything else. It won't stop that, but let's get this job done and let's see where we go from there. And that's where we are every bloody summer. that's all we can hope to be at again, really.
You're right. It doesn't really work, that last minute thing, does it? I kind of forgot until you started mentioning something. Didn't Leicester do that as well last year with Dean Smith? So, I mean, in terms of your prediction about it being home and hosed by that Sheffield United game, yeah, I hope you're right, Paul, because I think we all know Arsenal away, regardless of how their season pans out, whether they've got something to play for at that point or not, we do not want to be going into that game needing anything.
No.
I think that was another frustrating thing coming out on Monday as well, besides the injuries that I mentioned, which I think throws a lot into question for the lineup on for the Forest game, but also our goal difference. That was one of the things we sort of had in our locker, and six goals. Yeah, it doesn't get us in the towards the level that Luton are maybe at, but it does bring us back into the mix a little bit. That was our sort of ace in the hole. And obviously, it's worrying as well when we've got games against Liverpool, against Arsenal. I guess one positive you sort of touched on it, Lyndon, was the fact we did play attacking football at times. We did create chances. If we can do that in these home games coming up, then you would expect us to at least score. So if that does mean a point against Forest, a point against Brentford, I don't know, but that's something, because it sounds like we might have to do that without Dom. I don't know if there's any updates on his fitness this week, but I think Beto, who knows? We could spend an hour talking just about Beto, and I still wouldn't have a full idea of what he is. At times on Monday, he was baffling, and he and Decore's new knack of trying to see who can get offside the most during a game is quite a frustrating thing, I've got to say. A new little wrinkle that we've managed to unearth as the season's gone on.
I had to Google to see if Beto was Portuguese for offside.
Oh dear. I mean, his header, where he was obviously miles offside, it was a good header. I mean, he managed to...
It was a good header, but he was miles offside,
yeah. We'll need him to do something in these upcoming games. And was there anything really, anything else we learned? I think Gomez probably has to start. I think he did something when he came on, but I'm really, well, I can't even scrape the barrel anymore. The barrel's gone. So I think having someone in the middle though, who can offer something going forward. And also, in terms of that higher pressing game, we do need Idrissa Garnagay when we're playing that way, because otherwise, as we all saw on Monday, we are completely open. Although I don't expect us to be that open against Forest. It's a tricky old game, that, isn't it? I do fear them as well, because they've got, similar to Chelsea, they've got obviously ex-Chelsea player in Callum Hudson-Odoi, they've got those same kind of wingers who can kind of cut in and cause problems. So, but not the same kind of challenge, and certainly not the same kind of challenge that Cole Palmer posed on Monday. So I'd really like to think we would have a reaction and have enough, but I think much of that will depend on what sort of side we see out there, which I don't know at this point in time.
I just got to hope it scares them enough to start in a more familiar way of what they used to. You know, first 20 minutes of the game, let's not concede any goals, let's do the nuts and bolts first and then gradually move into it. I'm with Paul. I think it kind of depends what Luton do on Saturday, doesn't it? If they go and beat Brentford, which is very likely, or if it is likely, although hopefully Brentford will think one more result and we're safe in this league, and then we'll be a bit softer for next weekend. it depends what Luton do. If Luton don't beat Brentford, in fact, if they lose to Brentford, I don't think a draw is a bad result. And I know that isn't what anybody wants to hear, and it's certainly not what I want to see on Sunday, but then it becomes a don't lose, I think, before a win. If we were to win it, then brilliant. Then that gives us a little bit of breathing space. But I mean, I think the Luton result might change both sides' approach to the game. Because if Luton go and beat Brentford, then Forest are in the relegation zone on Sunday morning. So that might change everything again.
Yeah. It's a scary thought. Yeah, I'm hoping Brentford suddenly start playing football. Not when they play us, obviously, but yeah, they can get a result at Luton. Yeah, you're right, it will change. But I think our team might be different, and I think it should be. But I think the team sheet, obviously, that the squad that he names will be different, obviously, because of the injuries sustained by Patterson and Coleman, both of whom could now be out for the rest of the season. We have to hope that Jared Braithwaite will be fit to play. But I think he needs to make changes to the personnel, definitely, and maybe even the system. But for this one, I'd probably settle just staying with the same formation. But I would start Andre Gomes and Idrissa Gueye in midfield. If he had a tight calf, in quotes, last time out, then he should be fit to play. Calvert-Lewin's hamstring has always been a bit of a problem, but I would expect him to at least start and see how far he can go. I'd put James Garner at right back. I don't want Young or Godfrey there, but I bet my life one of them starts there. But I would put James Garner at right back. Again, praying DCL's fit. I'd put Jack Harrison back in, give him a run out, and look to bring Dan Juma in the second half off the bench, because I think he gives us something that we don't have in terms of, you know, goal threat. I just don't know what you do about the number 10 position, because Doucouré's done nothing since he came back from injury. So, I mean, unless you put Gomes or Harrison there, I don't know what option we have. But I would definitely put Andre Gomes in there, because I think he was the only bright thing that came out of Monday. Was at least he was able to put his foot on the ball and he had a bit of confidence that he'd be able to do something with it. In a way, and I think that first 45 minutes is probably cooked Onana's goose. It's certainly for the next game in Dyche's eyes, so I'd be very surprised if he starts. So yeah, I think we need Idrissa Gueye's energy and ability to break up play, and we need Andre Gomes's passing ability, frankly. So those are the changes I would make. If Braithwaite isn't fit, then obviously you've got to look to Michael Keane, and then at least you have someone in the opposing box who actually knows where the goal is. Bizarrely enough, you know, the auxiliary striker, Michael Keane, who, I mean, to be honest, I start him ahead of Beto at this point. I mean, Beto, I have sympathy with Beto for the early chance that he missed, because I think when you look at the replay, it comes across quite fast from Coleman and it hits him in the middle of the shin. The angle of his leg means that it was always going to go over the bar. So I have some sympathy for him, but my criticism of it is he always seems to go for power to try and just break the net with it, and he doesn't even get it anywhere near the target. I just like him to have a bit more composure. Maybe, again, we keep saying maybe it'll come. Maybe after, you know, this mythical year that you have in the Premier League to kind of find your feet, maybe it'll be better next season. But we need him to be better now. We need him right now. We need goals.
I'd like to have a six-pack, Lyndon. Beto isn't going to find composure. It's not available to him. It's just simply not there. He showed effort and endeavour. That's about all you can say, isn't it, really?
Which is something, let's be honest. You know, it's something.
Yeah, he was one of the few to show kind of real application. And as you say, we keep singling him out for it, but Onana really didn't. I can just imagine Mifumo on Sunday when it'll be Godfrey at right back, Ashley Young at right wing. I can see it.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
It's probably accurate. Godfrey will play. I'm certain of that. Yeah, it's, I mean, like, you got to hope Lamphway to come through. I really hope it. I think he's the most important of the lot, Adrissa Gueye, in terms of who we could get out there. I think we missed him for a little while now. Actually, throughout most of 2024, we had the African Nations Cup. He missed a few games during Ramadan. Couldn't play the full games. I think he only played one. Then there's the birth of his child, calf strain. I think we missed him a lot. Yeah, I think more than if everyone's somebody takes responsibility, I think Adrissa Gueye does that. So I think we need him in there desperately. And yeah, I don't think I've said this all season. I've actually been quite a lot of praise for an honour for a lot of the season, but that was way below standards on Monday. And yeah, I think him and Gomez, I'd agree would be. Yeah, I wasn't sure about Gomez before Burnley, but got him for the 90 minutes of that game, and I've seen it on the second half of Chelsea. I've seen enough there to say, yeah, play him. I think for my money with the core there, I just think you got to persevere and hope, really. And that's not really a great sort of strategy, but I think you've got to hope that, you know, is he still a top goal scorer? I mean, Jesus. Still, but like, you got to hope that he's got a few more left in this season. So hope that. Hopefully Dominic's made it. Yeah, I'd like to see Garner on the right-hand side, like right wing, where I've been saying that for ages, but again, doesn't sound like it's going to happen. Bates has played him there, so I don't see why. Was it West Ham earlier in the season, I think, or Brentford? He's played him there. So
more than once, but, I think, because the cup tie at Villa was where he moved him inside into the centre and he scored, and I think he started to show what he could do there, and then he kind of made that role his own. But I think earlier in the season he was playing right.
Yeah.
Right midfield.
Yeah, you're right. So I'd like to see that. But I think we'll see a lot more from them. Again, it can't be much worse than that. And just got to hope that the crowd's up for it, which I'm sure they will be. And, you know, there's some games, it happened to us at Wolves earlier in the season, we got in December, and we got hammered 3-0. And it's just one of them games when, like, sometimes you play a team and the other team's well up for it and you just can't match them for energy because they're just sort of after everything and you just can't really do anything. You just got legged off the park a little bit, you know. We need to be that team, I think. We just need that, you know, that one, we're off, get the crowd up. We just need to sort of, you know, be all over Forest, you know what I mean? Play with your heads, but just be, you know, be brave and, you know, really show the crowd, you know what I mean, that it means something to you. I think it should be quite an easy team talk, really, from like that point of view. You know what I mean? To get all the tactics and stuff out of it. Shouldn't be hard for Dice to say, look, you know, play for them. If you don't want to play for them and show them that you care, you know. Yeah. It shouldn't be that hard to do. Hopefully Coleman, Tarkovsky, can back them up with that, you know. And yeah, I'm talking myself into a win here, actually. So there we go.
We'll take it.
Yeah, that's why I've got nothing further to add. Let's end there quickly.
Okay, well, we'll finish the on-pitch chat there. We'll just finish quickly by talking about this long-running takeover saga. 777 Partners obviously had its deadline. They were supposed to meet on Monday night, but as widely expected, they were granted more time to try and somehow come up with the money to not only pay MSP back, but also fulfill the rest of the Premier League conditions placed on the approval of their bid. If you listen to Paul the Esk, he says this is about as positive a development as could be hoped for at this juncture because it staves off the immediate threat of administration. It likely means that 777 have given assurances that they'll keep funding the club for the next few weeks. And by the time we get to June, we can start entertaining offers, unfortunately, for our more saleable assets. That obviously doesn't solve the issue of how we'd replace anyone that we sell. But at the moment, we just have to limp along as a going concern and take it one step at a time. I mean, Paul, do you have anything more to add on this latest development, or are you as tired of the whole thing as the rest of us?
It's just gone on for too long. If they're saying they need, I'm no expert, obviously, but they're saying they need more time for this, and, you know, and to pay, you know, Rob and Peter to pay Paul. That's kind of the sort of saying which comes to mind, isn't it? But yeah. If they can't afford that and they need more time for this, it does make you worry that, are they the right people to take over Everton Football Club? I mean, obviously, the overwhelming noise out there is that, no, they're not. You know what I mean? I haven't really been too involved. If anything, I've tried so hard not to pay any attention to it. It's just so damn depressing. Quite honestly, it's just going on and on. But it does, we just need a resolution. Hopefully, it can be resolved. Mashiri needs to be out of there. He doesn't want to be a part of it. Whichever way, we need to sort of be looking forward. And if they are the owners, somehow try and get behind them. Hope that they can bring us forward. But it's in the longer term, I just seriously worry about next season if we were to stay in the league with, you know, without proper ownership, because I think, and I'm going off on a little bit of a tangent, but it seems like we've been a little bit fortunate this season, and them three teams that come up haven't really been equipped to be in the Premier League, really. You know, I mean, Luton have done quite well, but they haven't, you know, they've probably done better than they perhaps maybe should have done. Is that fair to say? I think if you look at next season, it's say Leeds, Southampton and Leicester all come up, there's three teams straight away way more equipped and ready to be Premier League teams, which will make staying up next season much more difficult. Yeah, so it needs sorting out, and we need to be in a position where we can be competitive next season. It could be really, really tricky.
That's the thing, isn't it? It's a big rebuilding job, whatever happens in the summer. So bringing in a bevy of investors who, to be honest, they all look like mugshots waiting to happen. Like, they're just... and I know you can't judge purely on appearance, but as you say, Paul, all we hear is delays and scrambling around for cash. I mean, you'd have to be a bit mad to not only own a football club, but certainly to want to own Everton Football Club right now, which is why we've got Majiri, I guess, because he's a bit mad, isn't he? Clearly. And so watching those guys, whether it's Josh Wander or the sort of look like Josh Wander on Monday night, and
Pound Shop Kendall Roy,
I mean, you know, they kind of look like the sort of the bad kids in a sort of like noughties rom-com, or like an episode of the OC or something, and you know, they're going to sell coke or something. They just don't look respectable in any way, shape or form. So so by that logic, they fit the bill completely. They're clearly a bit bonkers and don't have their own money, which is what we've got now. So it's not really going to be a huge sea change, is it? I hope some other white knight looms on the horizon. I don't see it happening. If that's the way for us to survive, if like a lot of our kind of problems over the last few years, they get solved by a bit of a short-term solution, and that is having some people become stewards of the club for some time during this strange transition, and then we'll find a way out of the fog, then so be it. But it's not like you can escape the on the pitch woe by going, oh well, at least we're the best run club who every other club looks to in times of dire need, because it's a bit of a soap opera, isn't it?
So
a bit, yeah. I mean, I don't know what the streaming giants were thinking when they decided not to do a documentary on Everton. I mean, you could have picked any year, but certainly this one. I mean, it's full of it, isn't it?
Well, are we on the soap opera scale? Like, you know, in terms of like, if like, you know, flying doctors is the worst. And
I was going to say, a shit home and away, because that's what we are.
We are shit home and away, you're right.
It's at least El Dorado, isn't it?
Crossroads. That's great.
God.
Oh, dear.
Anything to add on that, Andy?
No, absolutely not. I don't want to. I don't need to. I can't think of anything more to say. I mean, no, that the house is burning. Let's just run out quickly. There's nothing I can add to it. We all know how we all feel about it, and it's almost something that luckily now it looks like at least we can park it until the end of the season. There's going to be no potentially catastrophic drama between now and the end of the season, it looks like, anyway, because they've been given this extension. our very own Phil Mitchell will have to keep doing his bits until the end of the season, and let's see who's still living on the street at the end of it.
Cheers as always, fellas. Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll be back next week, probably before the derby, to review the Forest game and preview that clash with Liverpool that I'm sure all but the most optimistic of us have already written off. Until then, keep the faith, Blues. Give it everything you've got if you're going on Sunday. Up the Toffees. and all the best.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.